Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains accounts of sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
I would say the whole thing was like a waking nightmare. You're like, you keep thinking you're going to wake up, but you're not, where you're just tense and stressed and nothing changes. And, you know, I was trying to work during this. We also had a younger daughter. My husband's going to work. My daughter had girls bullying her. So we actually ended up changing schools. I ended up losing one job because I'd been taking time off all the time. The team leader actually came up to me at one point and said, no more time off without pay. I'm not doing this anymore.
That might sound like what life is like after everyone in the community discovers that someone in your family has been convicted of committing a violent crime. Like a living nightmare that you can't wake up from. Constant tension and stress, every day the same, in which your children are bullied and have to change schools, and you have to take so much time off from your job that you're eventually sacked after copping abuse from your team leader in front of everybody. But the woman we're hearing from today isn't an offender. No one in her family has committed a crime. She contacted us because she wanted all of us to know about her family's experience after they reported the rape of her 15-year-old daughter by a family friend.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
The family we're hearing about today still lives in the community in regional Victoria where the attack took place in 2012. And for that reason, we've chosen to protect their identities. We do have the permission of the victim, although she's elected not to participate herself. This is her mother's story. During the conversation, we'll reference the SOCCET units. SOCCET stands for Sexual Offences and Child Abuse Investigation Teams, and they're specialised units within Victoria Police. They were set up originally by Narelle Fraser's mentor, Lorraine Blackwell. We've uploaded an extra episode for you this week. It's a special conversation with Narelle and Lorraine, which featured the origins of the SOCCET units, among other things, to remind us of what they're really all about. The episode was originally for patrons only, but I felt it was only fair because the story you're about to hear is not flattering to one particular SOCCET unit. I'd hate to give the impression that it's reflective of everyone who works in the field or for Victoria Police, but it has to be said that the incidents described by this guest are by no means isolated. If you need to talk to someone about sexual assault, call 1-800-RESPECT, 1-800-737-732.
I think it's very important to outline to people how we're treating victims, especially victims of sexual violence and children. And I think what's been happening the last couple of weeks, especially in Parliament, is showing that as well again. And I think it's really important to just keep bringing it up and saying that we're not supporting these people enough. We're not supporting families and victims enough at all. And I know that that's been a theme through your podcasts as well.
That's so interesting because people ask me this question. Someone just asked me a couple of days ago, are all politicians out of touch to do with this issue? And I said, oh gosh, I mean, you can't generalise like that, all politicians. It's a hard question to answer, but I suppose they were feeling really let down by that sort of top line politicians, by the Prime Minister, by those cabinet ministers. So that's really interesting for you to say that is that's your feeling, that those top level guys are?
Yes. Yep. Yep. And I just think generally in the public and through my experiences, people don't react the way you think they're going to, and they can say some really awful things and you get quite surprised by that. I was very surprised. A lot of victim blaming. So a lot of, well, what did she get in the car for? Well, because she knew him and she trusted him. Why did you let someone like that around your daughter? Well, because he didn't have rapist written on his forehead, you know, like.
They never do, babe. If they did, they wouldn't get near women. That's what I always say. If rapists and pedophiles looked like rapists and pedophiles, they wouldn't get near their victims.
Exactly, exactly. But I was surprised that we got, you know, things like this from the police as well, and who were in the sexual offences unit.
Okay, so I guess you better tell us the story and take us through. Unfortunately, we always get to this point where we do need you to tell us a bit about your story so that we can understand how those things were said and how inappropriate they were. So if you wouldn't mind just explaining to us how it was that you and your family ended up having to face the judicial system and go through this process, because we know that it's so foreign to us all until we find ourselves having to figure it out and learn our way through it. So how did you and your family end up in this situation?
Exactly. Well, on the 11th of August 2012, I got up to take, we had a little puppy, and I got up to take the puppy out to the toilet, and I noticed that the back door was ajar. And I sort of thought, well, that's strange. Why is that opened? So I shut that and I went for some reason to check on my daughter, who's my 15-year-old daughter, whose room was down the back, and she wasn't there. And I sort of thought, oh my God, where is she? So I woke up my husband and I said, oh, she's not there. We can't find her. So we were going around the house, and we live in a really small town that has a milk bar, a pub and a football field. And there's probably only 250 people here, and we're surrounded by orchards. There's not a lot of places she could have gone.
It sounds like the kind of place where you would feel as though you know everybody.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you feel really safe. And so we're thinking, well, she couldn't have gone far. My husband went looking around the orchard and driving down the road, and we sort of thought maybe she just snuck out to go hang out with some of the teenagers that lived in town. So we were just driving around looking for her, and I stayed back at the house, and she turned up a couple of hours later, and she was very dishevelled. She had leaves in her hair, her clothes were a mess. She was at the least drunk, but I would say that she probably looked drugged as well. Her pupils and her eyes were very strange. She was very aggressive. She wouldn't speak to us. She just pushed me over and said, I'm going to bed, and didn't want to speak. And me and my husband were sort of asking, where are you being? Who are you being with? And all this, and she wouldn't answer. And so we sort of gave up. And our assumption was that she'd been at other teenagers' houses in the area.
The time that she did show up, would that have normally been a time where you guys would have still been in bed, so you wouldn't not have noticed that she'd been away if had you not got up to the puppy?
Yes, definitely. So I think I got up to the puppy about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and she came back in the house about 5. And I'm an early sleeper, so I went to bed early, probably about 9:30, and my husband went to bed probably about 11, and we'd left her up sitting on the back couch watching a movie, so that was fine. And I said, you know, we said to her, go to bed when the movie's finished. So the next morning I got her up early and made her wash her clothes because they smelt like smoke, like campfire smoke. So we assumed that she'd been, you know, out hanging around with some local kids, and she just said that, oh, I was out with some friends, and that's what she told us. So I made her wash her clothes and change her bed because her bed smelt, and that was that. But it was funny, I had this niggly feeling that there was something else, something wasn't quite right, whether something happened with these kids or I didn't know, but I knew she was upset. And a couple of days later we were sitting on the couch and she was coming home from school, and my husband's a corrections officer, and a car pulled up out the front and she got out and the driver got out, and the driver was actually an ex-inmate.
Oh.
So she knew his daughter. As I said, it's quite a small area, so everybody knows everybody else. And my husband's like, why is a prisoner at my house? And she came in with them, and we were like completely shocked and dumbfounded, and we're like, what's going on? And he said, something to tell you. She told his daughter, and then his daughter had told him, and he said, well, no, I'm going to pick her up and make her tell her parents.
Oh gosh, what an interesting moment I've just had. Oh, we have to stop, don't we? Gosh, we have to really take a moment. Wow, because I'm so judgmental. Oh no, I just had a moment that I think you guys had too, where we felt really nervous about this former prisoner dropping your daughter home, thinking he was someone we needed to be nervous about, when actually he is a person who's being really helpful in this situation.
That's right.
Okay, I'll have a hard look at myself a little bit later on, but thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he said, so I've got something to tell you. So we looked at and she said, sexually assaulted me the other night. And in my mind I went, aha, I knew something had happened. But out loud I just went, stop. Okay, everybody stop for a minute. We're taking you to the police. They left and I said thank you to them and everything, and we drove her straight to our local police station.
It's interesting that you said stop. I sometimes say stop to my children, just stop out loud as a word, when I'm getting just overwhelmed with information and just like I can't, and I never said it before I had children actually, but when I can't take everything in at once, was it that or what do you think? Why did you say that? Did you not want her to have to say it twice, or why did you say stop, do you think, in that moment?
I think it was I wanted her to give the story to the police and not have any sort of interference or input or from anyone else. And also I couldn't imagine saying it more than once or twice. Like, that must be awful. So, oh, I actually forgot a bit. So after she went and saw, she said she'd gone out with these people, other kids, when we thought it was still kids. We had taken her to the police station and said there were kids drinking and she'd gone missing. Yeah, because I was saying, who are these kids? And she said that they were older kids, 18 and 17. And I said, okay, so they gave you alcohol? And she's, yeah. So I forgot that bit, sorry.
You took her to the police when you thought you were just having an intervention about sneaking out and drinking, like underage drinking. You just took her to the cop shop to say, you know, have a bit of scary business about drinking in the park.
Exactly. Yeah.
And she never said anything.
No. And we took her to the doctor too.
Wow.
Because she was saying she couldn't remember what happened. And I was really sus that she'd taken something or been given something.
But she told her friend at school. I mean, that's pretty normal, isn't it, that she felt uncomfortable talking to you, but she went to school and told her mate.
Exactly.
And her mate freaked out and told her dad. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So we went to the police station and we were talking to a constable. She was quite young and she was taking statement and we were sort of sitting there all just all in shock. A member of the socket unit there came in and said, stop, it's not our area.
So the socket member came in and said, stop talking. This isn't our jurisdiction, basically. You have to go back to your own town and tell that socket.
Yes, yeah. So it wasn't actually our town, but the area that she was actually attacked in was in their town, because it's that whole jurisdiction thing. I was like,
it's jurisdiction. So it's frustrating because I sort of understand. I don't really, to be honest, but okay, we'll go with it. I guess that makes it better for them when it comes to court. But for you guys in that moment, it's like, hang on, this is a child and she's trying to tell her story and you're saying to her, shush, stop, get back in the car and drive however long to another police station and start again. That's hard.
It wasn't until the next day. They'll come and meet you at your local police station the next day at 11 o'clock.
So you guys have got to get through the afternoon, the night, the morning.
Yep.
Oh, man, yeah. That's hard on a family.
So then we went to the local police station the next day at 11 and met Narelle Fraser.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yes. So Narelle was wonderful. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Narelle, and I think that that's the reason why she was such a great detective. I know that she said to you in a podcast that she thinks she mightn't be so good because she took everything on and people who distance themselves are better, but I'd say she was perfect the way she was.
Me too. And also she was part of the beginning of sockets, like the beginning of this whole idea of getting all the disciplines that it took to investigate sexual assaults under one umbrella. So she was passionate about that idea and her mentor sort of invented that. So that was a lucky break. Okay, finally.
Yeah, she was great. So she asked us if she could take the video statement they take, and they had to have someone from CASA on the line, on a phone line in at it as well.
Yeah, the Centre Against Sexual Assault, yep.
Yeah. So we weren't in that. We weren't allowed to hear that. So because we weren't allowed to be seen as to putting any input in or anything like that. So it was probably good that I said stop at first when she started talking about it. And then Narelle came out and took statements from me and my husband, and she was just lovely. She was really great. And she said, oh, look, it's definitely rape. He's going to be charged with rape. What she's going, I could see him also be charged with kidnapping and all this sort of stuff.
So now I'm so sorry to keep interrupting. I'm really, really sorry. But I find that people often sort of gloss over their own places in these stories. And I just want to make sure that we don't do that with you, because you're a mum and this is massive.
Yes.
And Narelle's a lovely lady and she comes out and says to you as a mum, look, we're probably going to charge this man with raping your daughter and with kidnapping your daughter. Now, let's not gloss over that.
No.
Let's talk about that moment with you and your husband. I mean,
you're numb.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know how to process it. It doesn't sink in at first. You're just in shock. You can't even compute it.
Because it sounds to me like you, as far as you knew, you were living a really normal life. You got up to let the puppy out at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And the next thing you knew, you've got this nice police lady telling you she's charging a man with abducting and raping your daughter.
Yes. Yep. And having a husband who, my husband was a veteran, so he's a veteran. He was ex-infantry and a corrections officer now. And so he suffers from PTSD from overseas as well. And he just he couldn't deal with any of it. And he just wanted to kill him. I mean, I remember Narelle sitting down next to him and saying, now don't do anything silly. I've got this covered, you know.
Of course, and she knows that. As soon as she hears your husband's background, she's like, red flags.
Yeah.
And also the way you described, you just mentioned this person's first name, this offender, which makes me feel as though you knew him.
Yes. So my daughter had been riding horses for him. She'd ridden in a few rodeos on horses under his tutelage, and she'd also dated his son. So, you know, he was well known to us.
So that brings with it its own feelings of missing things and allowing someone into your life.
Yeah, exactly. And as we said before, you know, they're not monsters, so you don't know.
But that's grooming. I mean, that's what grooming's all about.
Exactly.
Grooming the whole family, not just the victim, but the whole family.
Yes. And that was the thing too, Narelle said to us when she listened to statement and everything, she said, oh, geez, he's got this down pat. I wouldn't be surprised if he'd done this before.
Mate, if there's one thing Narelle knows, it's sexual offenders. She can pick these patterns from a mile away.
Yeah, which makes, you know, as a parent, you feel really stupid. You're like, oh, my God,
no.
I didn't see this. I didn't think of this. I didn't, yeah.
Of course not, but that's why Narelle's got PTSD, because she spent years dealing with these horrible offenders and she saw these patterns. You shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So you were told this terrible news. Narelle walked out and broke it to you in the best way she possibly could, that she believed that she could charge this offender, which is a double-edged sword. It's good news in that she feels as though she has enough. It's bad news in that she's breaking to you that this is what's happened to your baby.
Exactly. Yeah. And we didn't even get time to really think either, because Narelle said it had actually happened on the banks of the Murray River. He'd driven her there. So she said, we'll get in the car and we'll go there and she can show me where it is, if she can pick out the spot again. And I've called the forensic police and they're going to meet us there so we can see what we can find there. So we hopped in the car and we were driving there, and it's actually quite funny. I was thinking, because I listened to your podcast one day and Narelle was saying she got a speeding fine driving home one day, and we were driving behind Narelle and we lost her. And I'm going to my husband, oh, my God, we're losing her, keep up. And he's going, but she can drive like that. So we went to the McDonald's first, because he'd taken my daughter to McDonald's. So I'll tell you when she first hit. Oh, do you want me to tell you exactly what happened before we go on?
You tell me exactly what you want to tell me. You go for it.
So he had arranged to meet her at 12 o'clock at night down the street from our house, saying that he wanted to talk to her about the horses, something to do with the horses.
Of course, she loved the horses. Of course she did. So if he's saying, I need to talk to you about the horses, of course she's going to be there.
Exactly, yep. So she went, snuck out and went, and when she got in the car, he gave her an open can of Coke and he put a little bit of, I can't remember what it was, Bundy in it or something, just a little splash, and said, oh, you know, here you are, have a little bit of that. And she's thinking, you know, I guess as a 15-year-old does, oh, I'm all naughty, you know. But we think it had maybe OxyContin and speed in it as well. She ended up very, very sick, vomiting, in and out of consciousness. So then he drove from our small town, about a 45-minute drive, and went to McDonald's and got himself some food and then took her out to the river. So we went with Narelle to McDonald's first because she wanted to see if they had footage of them there. And would you believe the cameras weren't working that night? But so he did leave his hat, black cowboy hat, that would have had tons of DNA on it because it would have been very sweaty and that, but they'd thrown it out and the bins had been emptied that morning. Yeah, it was sort of one of those things that you were just like, okay. Then Narelle said, we'll go out to the river and find the spot. So they went down and he built a fire and put a swag down and they'd been there. And one really great thing was that with the forensic police, they found his McDonald's drink and straw. Yep, so they got the DNA off that. They found empty OxyContin packets and they found a patch of dark dirt, which was where had thrown up. So the forensic police took all that. Narelle took photos and I think and all that sort of stuff. And then she said, I need you to drive down to the forensic nurse. And then she was going to go back and she'd get back in contact with us later on. So we drove down, saw the forensic nurse, and that was when we first encountered a detective called and she was the polar opposite of Narelle, not friendly, not nice at all, didn't really say much, sort of got a little bit huffy, I think, because couldn't cooperate with the forensic nurse. She couldn't relax enough, so they couldn't complete their exam.
Yeah, well, I bet. I mean, I don't know exactly what the sexual assault exam entails, but I can imagine. And I can also imagine how a teenager couldn't relax enough to allow it to happen. I mean, that's got to be common, right?
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Thank you to our patrons, Wyatt Zacker, Kathy Conway Archer, Sarah Lipton, Andrea Caron, Georgia Ulhorn, and Tegan Johnson.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That was when we first encountered a detective called and she was the polar opposite of Narelle, not friendly, not nice at all, didn't really say much, sort of got a little bit huffy, I think, because couldn't cooperate with the forensic nurse. She couldn't relax enough, so they couldn't complete their exam.
Yeah, well, I bet. I mean, I don't know exactly what the sexual assault exam entails, but I can imagine. And I can also imagine how a teenager couldn't relax enough to allow it to happen. I mean, that's got to be common, right?
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So what had happened when he'd taken her down the river and set up the camp for on the swag, when she had woken up because she'd obviously passed out or something and she felt cold and it was because she didn't have any clothes on. He'd taken all her clothes off and was raping her. She had to turn her head to throw up and things like that and he didn't stop and she tried to start to make noise but he put his hand over her mouth and said, shush, I don't want to go to jail and all that sort of stuff. And when he'd finished, he just got her dressed and actually drove her home. And because he was telling her the whole way home, it's all your fault. You sent me all the messages. You gave me all the signals. And I think that's what she believed.
Which again would suggest to me this isn't the first time he has done this. That is sort of a way of gaining silence from his victim to try and convince her on the way home that she's at least complicit in the attack.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think for a long, long time, and I probably think she almost probably still does on some level think it's still her fault. I mean, I've heard her say to me, I shouldn't have gone with him, but, you know, that's not her fault.
Of course not. If you phoned me in the middle of the night and said I need to talk to you about some horses at Macca's, I would be there. I swear to God I would be there, you know?
And as a 15-year-old girl, they were her life.
Yeah, of course.
The horses were her life.
Of course.
That's what she loved.
Yeah. And this is the father of her boyfriend. I mean, all of it is so manipulative. It's so understandable, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So we went home and we just sort of waited to see what would happen. And came out and told me I had been trying to contact her on Facebook saying, don't go to the police, don't talk to the police, you know. And she had told him already did. So I thought, oh, no, I better ring and let her know. She didn't even let me finish. She just went, oh, what is she doing? Is she a silly little girl? Is she making this up? Is she lying about this? And I was like, well, no. And then she said, have you seen the video statement? And I said, no. And she, as a detective, should know we're not allowed to see that statement. And Narelle had told us that gave a great statement, which said to me that the statement wasn't good enough. She doesn't like it. She doesn't believe. Lying, not a good enough witness. She has better cases than this, and you know how busy she is. And I was just in shock. I actually had her on speakerphone, and my husband had a brand new four-wheel drive, and he backed it into a tree. He was just listening to this, like we were just. I didn't even know what to say back.
No, because your parents. I mean, I don't need to overstate it, do I? You're in your own hell. This is terrible.
I think it was another level for me too. I was brought up by my grandparents, and my grandfather was a policeman, and he was a very well-known policeman. He taught at the academy in his spare time, and they used to have a big picture of him on the wall when you walked in. And I was always brought to believe that they're these great people, and if you're in trouble and you have a problem, you go to them and you'll be safe and it'll all be good. And it wasn't like that at all. Well, Narelle was, but she wasn't on the case anymore. So the case had been given to, I'm not sure why. I'd hate somebody complaining about me to my back. So I emailed and I said, I'm not happy with the way that you spoke to me. I'm not happy with the things that you said. I think I would prefer if there was someone else on the case. I don't think you're quite right with the way that it's fitting. Do you know what I mean? Sort of. And I also said, how would you feel if this had happened to your daughter? Is this the way you'd want to be spoken to? And in this time also I went to the courts and got an intervention order because I'm thinking here's a man who raped my daughter contacting her. Like, shouldn't the police have got the intervention order? I didn't know. But I went and got an intervention order and we were in front of Stella Suthridge. Magistrate, and she was furious when she read my application and said to the duty lawyer Brian, what's going on? Get these detectives on the line, talk to them, and we'll adjourn. You come back. And when we come back, he said they wouldn't talk to me either. They won't talk to me. She was just in shock and she issued the order. But apparently when you make a complaint, you're in like a witness. He shouldn't have been contacting her anyway because that's interference with a witness. But I've never said anything about that.
That's right. Who's telling him that? Who's telling you that if not your detective? And this is this harsh learning curve that you're on. You don't know that. I wouldn't know that.
No. And you're at a complete loss. You're at the complete power of the police and the courts and everything because you don't know. Yeah, so Brian actually said something to me which was quite shocking. He was the duty lawyer. I can't think of his last name, but he was a very well-respected lawyer. He'd been here for quite a long time. So I guess he's seen a lot. He said, the system's broken. It can't be fixed. And that if we were rich or famous, it would matter, but we're not, so nobody cares.
So these are the sorts of people who continue to work in the system because they want to be of service to people like you, but they're sort of jaded to the point where they'll say to people like you, look, sorry, this is all we've got to work with, but I'm here and I'm doing my best.
That's it, yeah.
Meanwhile, how is your daughter going, by the way? How is she, I mean, you are you're trying to be the icebreaker at the head of this ship. You're trying to take as much of this on as you can, clearly. You've got a husband with PTSD, you've got a daughter who is a victim. It seems to me as though, as usual, mum is out the front trying to take on as much of this as she can. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, definitely.
How is everybody else going behind you with this?
I think it's just like I would say the whole thing was like a waking nightmare. You're like, you keep thinking you're going to wake up, but you're not. And you're just in shock, and one day after the other is just sort of a rolling on thing of where you're just tense and stressed and nothing changes. And, you know, I was trying to work during this. We also had a younger daughter. My husband's going to work at the prison where he works, and he just didn't want to deal with any of the prisoners. But his bosses were really good and supported him. So my daughter was just, we were trying to find counselling and things like that. That's the other thing. Nobody told us where to go for counselling, who to see, who can give us help. There was, we didn't know. We didn't know anything.
No, I've said this before. I always imagined that when you're a victim of crime, especially serious crime, that somebody comes to you and says, don't worry, here's everything you need. Here's your counselling, here's your lawyer, here's your all your services that you need. I was so shocked to learn that no, none of that. There is no person. You're just left to figure all of that out for yourself. Stunning.
Exactly. Yeah, you just kind of cut adrift. And left to float, and you find your own way.
Because perpetrators get that. Perpetrators get all that.
And this was another thing, my husband being in corrections, and I had actually worked in corrections as well, we knew how much they get. And so now we were learning from the other side going, well, this is quite different.
So did you finally get a court date? I assume he got charged.
Oh, not for a long time. He wasn't even interviewed for a year. So
he's out and about in the community. You're still in this tiny community.
Yeah. So he lives a couple of hours away, but it was still, because it's sort of the border region, everybody's sort of, and especially when you're in that horsey community. And his best friends were not far from here. So he'd be coming down, driving past the house, all that sort of stuff. And one of the things was they were saying they couldn't find him. But that's funny, we knew exactly where he was.
Of course, where else would he be?
But after I'd sent that email and said those things to her, I got a phone call, and I'll always remember this phone call because I went and got a massage, and I thought, oh, I really need a massage. So I went and got a massage, and I just paid for it, and after I'd finished and were walking out, my phone rang, and it was boss, and that massage just went right out the window.
Shoulders way back up to the ears. Yep.
So I can't exactly remember his name because he didn't really let me get a word in. He spoke at me and was quite aggressive. He blasted me, and I felt like a little kid. And he just said that he had in his office, and she was very upset. How dare I upset one of his best detectives? She's been a detective for 10 years, and who did I think I was? And that if I didn't want her on the case, well, he doesn't have a lot of detectives in there all busy, so the case wouldn't go anywhere and it'd just be put on the back burner, so we have her or no one.
Who do I think I am? I'm the mother of a 15-year-old rape victim.
Yeah, yep. But I don't think I'd ever met police like this. I was quite shocked. So, yeah, obviously I had to agree to that.
Because your option is either you cop who now really doesn't like
you. Yeah, exactly.
Or you don't have the sexual assault of your daughter investigated at all. So they're your options.
We just sort of went along and we were waiting for information, and we'd ring and wouldn't answer or wouldn't take the call or wasn't there or, you know, that sort of stuff. And so I was sort of asking around, asking local police, well, any police that I knew, what do I do? And I had one that sort of coached me in boot camp group and that, and they're all saying, make a complaint. This is ridiculous. But there's nowhere. Where do you make a complaint to? So I found this corruption line number and I called that. And the officer answered and she listened to my story. She said, well, that's not corruption, and hung up. Like, she didn't even tell me where to go, where to make a complaint. So, again, I was just kind of like searching around, asking people, and I came across how to make a police integrity complaint. So it's hard to find. They don't put it out in the open. So I sent an email into that and detailed everything that had happened. And this has probably been going on 8-9 months now. And I got a call from a detective who was from the section that deal with these complaints, and he said he'd investigate it. Then he contacted me and said, oh, we're in. Can you come to the Quest Hotel and talk to us about it and everything? And I said, yep, okay. So I left work and went there, and it was him and another detective. And I was told that they'd had a look at it. They believed that my main problem was communication, and that she'd be getting a senior detective who would be taking over and supervising the case, but she'd still sort of be there. And would I sign this letter? But, by the way, they had it all typed up, all printed out, all done, ready for me to sign that I was going to withdraw the complaint.
What? They'd written a letter on your behalf for you to sign on the spot?
Yep, they already had it with them. So I ended up signing the letter because all I wanted was for them to move this case forward. That's all I wanted.
Oh, my God. You signed it there on the spot?
Yep.
Oh.
Because they said that if I sign this letter, the case will move forward and we'll go and it'll all be good. And yeah.
Did you have a lawyer, by the way? At any point, did you have any legal representation, you know, to do with your daughter's case or any of this?
No. We were told constantly by the detectives, we don't need one.
Of course not, because you're part of the prosecution's case, so you don't need your own lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I was naive because I grew up with a policeman who you just think police are good.
And also, hiring a lawyer is expensive, so for all of those reasons.
Oh, yeah. Finally, I was interviewed 1 year later.
This is the alleged perpetrator at this stage, alleged.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now, we weren't told any of this. I only found out this later on. This new detective called me one day and said that, oh, they're going to send the case to New South Wales because the Vic surveyors had decided that because it happened on the bank of the Murray, that it was actually covered under New South Wales jurisdiction. So I was like feeling, oh, my God, here we go. We start from the start all over again. So it went to New South Wales and I got a phone call from a detective at Deniliquin, and she was lovely. She would be the Narelle of New South Wales. She's a mother of four and she was just wonderful. And she said she got the brief and she got it all. She was disgusted as to why VicPol had taken so long. She didn't understand why they'd taken so long. She was shocked, but she was going to get him. She said, I'm going to get him. I'm going to arrest him and I'm going to get him. But, and this is where I went, my bosses want a surveyor to do the area again because they believe it's still in Victoria. So this all took probably another 6 months or so. And she rang me one day and she said, oh, I'm really sorry, but the surveyors have said it's in Victoria. So it's going back now. And she said, do you want me to get our bosses to call your boss and say this needs to be taken care of? And I said, no, it's okay. Look, I didn't really want to upset VicPol anymore. I was trying to just get the case to move forward. So anyway, I called the detective to say that the case was coming back, and I was actually sitting at my desk at work, and I said, the case is coming back to Victoria. And he said, fuck, guess I have to fucking deal with it then. And Yeah, I didn't know what to do. I felt like the world was collapsing. I just felt completely and utterly alone. That I don't know, that there was no stable ground anymore. Like, your foundation's built on these people are supposed to be who you go to when bad things happen, and the fact is that they don't care. And I don't know if his attitude was because we'd made the complaint about... I felt that they'd closed ranks. All this time being in a small town, my daughter had told her friend, who then told the school. I don't know why, you know, girls gossip. And she had girls bullying her. They were yelling things out like, I don't date 45-year-old men. One boy told her to kill herself. The teachers defended him, saying, oh, he doesn't understand the gravity of what he said. I said, Mike, are you kidding? A 16, 17-year-old boy knows what that means. So he actually ended up changing schools. I ended up losing one job because I'd been taking time off all the time, and HR were all for it and really good. But the team leader actually came up to me at one point and said, no more time off without pay. I'm not doing this anymore. And he knew what was going on with my family, and I was just like, I don't know, I think some people thought that I was dramatic, but I was getting bullied. The psychologist was telling us she was suicidal. The police weren't being helpful. I just, yeah, was completely overwhelmed. So, I mean, all this time we're just an incredibly stressed household.
Of course you are. How are your relationships going, by the way? Oh. May I be so pertinent as to ask, how are your relationships going? I mean, you know, 3 years back, your husband had PTSD. Your daughter was a teenage victim of sexual assault. You had a younger daughter. You were the mum out front just trying to drag everybody through this. How are your relationships going years down the
track? During that whole period, so the whole thing right up to the end of it took 8-9 years. I think we drank way too much.
Of course.
I really do think that was a problem. I can remember times having a drink and my youngest would come up to me the next day and go, oh, Mummy, do you remember last night you were just crying on the couch? And I was like, oh, no, I can't even remember that. And that's when that got really scary and I was like, oh, okay, I'm drinking too much because I can't even remember.
Having lived through COVID lockdown in Melbourne, I totally relate now. You know, like, I couldn't have related to that a year ago. Honestly, I swear to you, I couldn't have related to that a year ago, but now I actually can. And that's so pathetic because that is nowhere close, but I feel like I can actually relate to that now. I don't know how you did this for 8 or 9 years, and how was your husband going, and how were you going parenting your younger daughter for all that time?
Oh, well, I'll tell you about it at the end, but she actually has quite a lot of difficulties now.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And that's all due to growing up in this incredibly stressed household for so long. I think my husband just, he disassociated. He buried himself in his work and everything else. He couldn't deal with it at all. He'd get really angry, though. He broke his hand once smashing a mirror, so he punched the mirror. I think there were a few holes in walls. And me, I just had to keep everything together. I'm the bum, so. Yeah, we finally got our charges, went to court, and we went, and I don't think a detective realised I was sitting sort of behind him in the corner. And when the charges came up, she was a great magistrate. She's called Jenny Crichton. And when the charges came up and the OPP said, oh, we're charging so-and-so with rape of this girl, and she read the charges and she was obviously realised the date that it had happened and the date that we're in court now. And she said, why are these charges taking so long? Who is protecting this child? And the OPP didn't know what to say, the lawyer. He was sort of, well, if you can adjourn for a minute, I'll talk to the detective. And she went, oh, is he here? And he went, yeah, he's behind me. She said, get him up here. So she got him up here to the front. And she said, why all the delays? What's going on? Why is this taking so long? And detective said, oh, well, there's border issues, Your Honour. And she said, don't give me that. Try again. And so he said, oh, Your Honour, there are issues with the mother. And that's how he said it, the mother. And I mean, anybody can go and get the magistrate court's recordings or whatever, so I'm not making this up, but that's exactly what he said. And I actually hit my husband. I like went, what? You know, like hit him and went, what the fuck? And I was trying to control myself, but I couldn't because I just wanted to strangle him. I was thinking if it delays from me, if it was up to me, it would have been in court 3 years ago. Yeah, the mother. You know what? I can take that. If this is what it takes to get it done, mate, call me Karen. I don't care. I'll be the biggest Karen in the whole world. The trial had started on a Monday. We'd all given our evidence by the Monday, Tuesday, and then we had to wait till the Friday for the decision, but I think they were only out for an hour or two. They weren't out for very long at all. The social worker called us and said, oh, he's guilty. And so we were just like, oh, there went all of this, like it just, I can't even explain it. It was just like this huge load just went, we could breathe. We were thinking, oh, my God, it's over. So, yeah, that would have been, 7 years. And then we were told when sentencing was, and it was really good. He was given 9 years with 6.5 parole, which is quite a long sentence in Victoria. It did take a terrible toll on our family. Our youngest daughter has recently been diagnosed with extreme anxiety and borderline personality disorder, they say due to trauma. So she's actually tried to commit suicide a few times last year. And that's where, like, I sort of really copped it from the psychologists too, and that when they were saying, oh, you know, the household that she grew up in and things, and I'm sort of thinking, mums can't win. I can't please everyone. I tried to do the best that I could for everyone, but obviously I didn't.
Oh, God, I feel so pathetic for saying this because I say this to my twins and I am nothing compared to you. But I say to them all the time, I'm just one person. And I just say that because I'm a single mum of twins. But listen, you are just one person. And everyone needs to accept that. You're just one person, babe.
Thanks.
God, I'm going to cry. You're just one person.
I don't. I will cry. I just feel like I forgot her, obviously.
But you're just one person.
So I tried to remember, but I think I better explain why I was so single-minded on this. I grew up in a really abusive family and I was sexually abused as a child and nobody did anything. And I was not. I'm going to fight this. I'm going to stand up and say no, and she's going to get her day in court and she's going to say, yes, this did happen. And I did everything to make sure that she got that. So.
If you need to talk to someone about sexual assault, call 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737 732 or visit their website. Thank you to our guest today. And thank you to our patrons, Joanna Wilson, Eilish Neglin, Lily Jones, Alana Godden, Melanie Saunders, Nicholas Gonzalez, and Shana Atkins. Don't forget there's another episode up this week featuring Narelle Fraser and Lorraine Blackwell, in which they discuss the origins of the socket units. And thank you very much for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Australian True Crime, the live show, is coming.